answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, Send her away, for she cries out after us. But he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then she came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. And she said, True, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table. Then Jesus answered and said to her, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. So this is an account in Matthew. There's also an account of the same miracle and circumstances in Mark. And I just want to read one verse that I think Mark adds. Mark 7, verse 27. Recognize this as the same as an expansion of what we saw in Matthew. But Jesus said to her, Let the children be filled first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dog. So the account in Matthew, or in Mark there, adds kind of the phrase at the beginning, Let the children be filled first. So let's go back and look and identify kind of the three main characters, so to speak, in this miracle. So we have the children, where it speaks of. Those would be the Jews. We have the blessing, and that would be what the Lord has provided, and is also praying for dogs, and that's the Gentiles. And it's interesting, the word that's used there, the dogs, is actually little gentle dog, as opposed to guard dog, or junkyard dog, or something like that. You know, hound, and snarling, and this dog, this description, this noun, she's there describe family pet, so something that would be around and be friendly and would welcome to the home, as opposed to junkyard dog, you know, like the front door. So anyhow, we have kind of those three different aspects to the phrase the Lord uses with the Canaanite woman. Now, again, I started out saying that this was in an area that the Lord didn't travel in. Once in the scriptures, we find him going to that area. And the Canaanites, you may remember who the Canaanites were. Israelites came into the Promised Land. They were to destroy a number of. Heard that this morning. The passage that Daniel read. They were to destroy certain groups as they came into the Promised Land, and the Canaanites were one of the ones to be destroyed. So they were enemies of the Jews from the very beginning, and as happened more often than not, the Jews were not destroyed. So this Canaanite woman is one of the original inhabitants of Palestine, and she was pagan, and they bore a particular ill will against the Jewish people. So they had kind of an enemy in order to get in the territory, so to speak. So we have that kind of as the historical perspective. He goes into this area, and then he encounters this Canaanite woman. And she comes to him with her request. It's interesting the way she approaches the Lord. And as we read there in verse, verse 22, have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. So this was a pagan woman referring to the Lord as the son of David. She would have respond to her, and the response is probably, you know, the disciple who's standing there when he makes the response to her. He says in verse 24, but he answered and said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So he's telling the disciples, I wasn't sent to minister to these, non-Jews. I was sent to minister to the, house of, Israel. Now, we see what, her reaction is, her appropriate reaction. She comes to him and says, Lord, help me. So she comes before him. She acknowledges who he is. He is the only one that can help her in his in that situation. So that's the second instance. You know, she came to him first, made her request, a very specific request. Her daughter had been demon possessed, asked the demon be taken out. We saw the Lord's non-response, so to speak, and then what he said before the disciples. Then she comes back with her Lord help me. And then he lays out in more detail why he was not immediately answering her request. And again, I'll read that. It is not series of principles related to our asking. And, the first point that Ryrie makes is prayer must be directed. So we need, this seems to be an obvious point, we go before the Lord with our prayer request. Who else would we go to? He's the only one that can answer our prayers. He's the only one who ultimately keeps his word. So, again, that's kind of an obvious point. Now, the second point Ryrie makes is prayer must be definite. Now, I read that and I said, I'm not sure I 100% agree with it. The prayer must be definite. But I think there are, and then I read more of his explanation, and I think I'm kind of coming around to his point of view, is I know sometimes you're praying about something and you look at a mess and you say, wow, Lord, I'd like to help you out here, give you my opinion on what you need to do here, but this is such a mess, I'm just gonna leave it in your hands. But I think even in an instance like that, when you don't have any idea what the Lord should do, He does. So you're bringing a specific situation before Him that's troubling you. You acknowledge that this is beyond your human capacity to even dream up a solution. So you turn that situation over to the Lord. So I think that probably falls under the category of a prayer being definite. Even though you don't know what the outcome is going to be, you thought a definite situation before the Lord. Unlike a lot of our prayer requests are pretty specific, can be, so-and-so is sick, so-and-so needs this, needs that, we can come with some very specific prayers. But again, I think our prayers are definite, even if we don't know what the outcome is going to be. The third thing that he brings in this, prayers must be determined. And we see how determined this Syrophoenician woman was. She actually came to the Lord three times. She didn't take no for an answer. She kept coming back with the request. And as we read, she made the request very specific at the first part. She wanted her daughter to be healed. But she came back for the third request. And I think that's what the Lord desires from us too, is as we pray, we must be steadfast in our prayers. There's a warning, we're warned against vain repetition. And I think we can all come up think of vain repetition. There are some that pray certain canned prayers all the time. And that's, to me, that's what I always view as vain repetition. These people don't even think about it. They just have it memorized, rolls off their tongue, and they're thinking about something else. But, they've got this thing memorized. And the Lord doesn't want these vain repetitions. He wants a definite prayer when we come to Him. So I think that's the point to be made here. And she doesn't repeat the prayer all three times. The first time she specifies the need, and she comes back in three times. And we kind of went through the fourth point that Ryrie makes. Prayer must be dispensational. And that kind of got back to the issue of where this woman stood in relationship to the Lord. She was not a Jewess, so she had to approach Him on the basis of grace and mercy, which she ended up. And that's, of course, where we are. We're on that dispensational line of things where we're under grace and mercy. There was no covenant relationship between principles related to God's answering. And the first one he cites is he may be silent. And, you know, sometimes we'll pray and we're waiting for an answer and we don't get it as quick as we would like to hear it. But as Ryrie says here, silence on God's part does not mean deafness to our request. So then the second point he makes, he will sustain. And that's kind of the answers to prayers. He will sustain us. He will keep us while we're waiting for this response. He's not going to let us falter and fail. Kind of as we looked at the passage there, in Mark, it said, let the children be filled first. So that was kind of the Lord's way of telling her, okay, we're going to let the Jewish people have their shot at it first, but the implication is let them be filled first, so which means the implication is somebody else is going to be filled too. So he will sustain, so don't lose faith, as you're waiting for an answer to prayer. And then, finally, the answer, or the third point that Ryrie makes here, he always supplies. And that's certainly the way the Lord deals with us in prayer. He always supplies. Doesn't mean he always says yes to our prayers. But he always supplies and sustains us in our prayers. He has promised in Philippians 4:19, we won't look there, God has promised to supply our needs, but not necessarily our wants. Sometimes we tend as human beings to pray selfishly, I guess, is probably the way we would maybe categorize some of the things we come before the Lord with. I think this is what I'd really like to have, Lord. So he supplies. Again, he supplies our needs and not necessarily our wants. Now, the Lord is gracious. Sometimes he does supply our wants. So it's an interesting exercise to look through how the Lord answers prayer. So I think that pretty much covers the time allotted to me, the things that I wanted to look at this morning. Again, an interesting passage. You need to study it a little bit. A couple things that came out there that I probably hadn't understood. Though for many years I kind of glossed over this miracle, but there are some interesting aspects.